From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. The debates are over. George Bush and John Kerry have traded face-to-face jabs for the last time. Now both men are on the final sprint for the ultimate prize in American politics. Today, both candidates were in Las Vegas, and both were sounding confident.
With only 19 days to the election, the finish line is in sight.
My friends, after three debates, two conventions, and months of campaigning, today we really do stand at a moment of great possibility and a moment of great hope.
Nearly everyone believes that the election, now just 19 days away, could be won or lost by a whisker. It has seldom been more true that every vote counts. In key states, they are priceless. Between now and November 2nd, the candidates and their campaigns have crucial choices to make. How to spend their last millions in advertising dollars. How to deploy their volunteers. Which states and streets to flood. Tonight on Point, the endgame in Campaign 04, the Bush and Kerry strategies in the home stretch. You can join the conversation. What does George Bush need to do to win this election now? What about John Kerry? What's it going to take to clinch this race? You can join the conversation at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. We begin tonight with a closer look at the latest polls. Last night, as the debates were aired, CBS News conducted a real-time survey of uncommitted voters. After the debate, CBS asked respondents what they thought about Bush and Kerry. Did they remain undecided? Kathleen Frankovic is director of surveys for CBS News. Kathleen, thanks for being with us again.
Nice to be with you.
I understand that the debates have had a major impact on the voters you've tracked. What did you learn?
Well, we learned that that many of them did make up their minds, that at the end of the debate last night, these uncommitted voters split fairly evenly between the two candidates, perhaps with Kerry getting a little bit of an edge, but many, about a third, still remain undecided. Now, what I think is most interesting about the results of our poll of uncommitted voters is that the image of John Kerry may have been helped in a way that we haven't really seen helped before. Before the debate, these individuals, only 31% said that they thought that John Kerry had clear positions on the issues. After the debate, that number rose by 21 points. Those same people, 59%, said that that John Kerry had clear positions on the issues. That's a rise of 28%.
So a bump for Kerry there, but some background noise saying he's clear on the issues, and yet the undecided splitting pretty much down the middle.
Well, splitting narrowly down the middle with Kerry getting an edge, and about a third, more than a third, still saying there's still time for them to make up their minds. It's important to note, though, that even though we've been through three presidential debates, we're not sort of at the end of the debate effect. If there's an impact from this last debate, if the candidates are sort of plus or minus when it's over, we'll probably know that by Sunday. We'll probably know that once people absorb the entire three-debate series and think about it. And then we're down to the last 2 weeks,
and
that's the home stretch.
And, of course, the pounding will go on in ads and comments through these weeks. Kathleen, I know that you see your own polls in the context of the bigger picture of polls. What can you tell us on this day after the last debate with the 19 days to Election Day? What do the polls look like for these two men?
Well, all of the polls that have been done suggest that this is an extraordinarily close race, that Kerry has gained in the last 2 weeks. He has moved from what most polls suggested was clearly trailing George W. Bush to dead even, or in a few polls, perhaps a point or two up. Now, what that means, if that's the way the race stays over the next few weeks, if that's how the race stays, we're going to be up late on election night, and we're going to be focusing all our energy on those swing states. Because if it's close nationwide, it may very well be close again in some of the most critical states.
And what about polling inside those critical states? Do you have any numbers on the real tight ones, the real must-have states?
Well, the latest polls that are out there have been done by a number of Midwestern newspapers, and they've been looking at the Midwestern states. And they suggest that John Kerry has made some gains in the last few weeks, that many of these states, like Iowa, like Minnesota, are still quite close. Others, Michigan, are clearly going to be are states where John Kerry is clearly ahead. Iowa is an interesting state. Iowa is a state that Al Gore won last time, and the latest polls suggest that George W. Bush may be marginally ahead.
And behind the surface numbers, what other poll numbers do you think the two campaigns are looking at as they craft their final strategies here for the home stretch?
Well, I think a lot of attention is going to be paid and has been paid on just securing the bases and securing the people who should be voting for them, making sure that they're voting for them in enormous numbers, so that John Kerry wants to get 9 out of 10 Democrats to vote for him. He's almost there. He would love to have a clear majority of women supporting him, and that's not necessarily true in several of the polls. He needs to get 90% of African American voters. Our last poll only shows him with just over 80%, and still almost 1 in 10 black likely voters saying that they're undecided. He doesn't have union members yet in his pocket. So, you know, there's this mobilizing of the base and focusing on the base and making sure you get all of those people out and to the polls, and then there's the effort to make sure that the swing voters, the middle-of-the-road, moderate voters, the small, shrinking group that's left manages to come to you. And that group is definitely shrinking. In the last CBS News poll conducted before the final debate, the swing voters, the uncommitted voters, people who are undecided or had a choice but said their minds could change, were 18% of all likely voters. At this stage in the campaign, back in 1992, they made up 35% of likely voters. And just 4 years ago, more than 1 in 4 voters were still sort of on the edge and making up their minds at this point in the 2000 presidential election.
And Kathleen, let me ask you, we're going to be talking tonight about the so-called air war, the media campaign that is advertising, particularly, of course, in swing states, and the ground war, that is the street-by-street organizing. As a pollster, how do you look at those efforts? Can they produce real surprises for you? Is it possible that there are ground organizing efforts under the radar that will make the polls look foolish on November 3rd?
I think that ground efforts can have an impact that matters, an impact on the national numbers of maybe no more than 2 or 3 percentage points, which may not be enough to make us look completely foolish on election day. But the ground effort is something that does matter. I mean, the conventional wisdom is that Al Gore had that ground effort in 2000, and that's why the election ended up being so close, and Al Gore won the popular vote, something that most polls did not think that he would do. And then, of course, in 2002, in the off-year election, the conventional wisdom is that the Republicans had the ground war. I think the ground war is something that can work against the polls and come up with answers that may be different from what the final pre-election polls show. The advertising will show up in the polls leading up to election day. The ones that are done next week, the ones that are done on the final week, and certainly we should have that measured in what we see on the morning of Election Day. If I may, I think the more interesting thing, besides the ground wars, besides the ad war, is the war for voters, the war to get voters to the polling places now. In many states, voters can cast their ballots early. In many states, an absentee vote isn't difficult. It's just a matter of requesting one. And the campaigns, I think, are paying very close attention as to who's filed for an absentee ballot, who's gone to the early voting polling places, and trying to get voters to do that. Because after all, if they voted, their vote can't change, and if they're voting for you, that's a sure vote.
That effort is going on right now, and we will hear about it. Nothing to be taken for granted in this campaign. Kathleen Frankovic, thanks so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Kathleen Frankovic is Director of Surveys for CBS News. She spoke with me from New York. We are talking tonight about the end game in the presidential campaign, the home stretch, Bush and Kerry strategies now on the way to November 2nd. Joining me now from Washington is Wall Street Journal political reporter John Harwood, national political editor for the Wall Street Journal. John, wonderful to have you. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Good to be with you.
Also joining us from Hanover, New Hampshire is On Point senior news analyst Jack Beattie. Jack, thanks for being with us.
Pleasure, Tom.
John Harwood, how do you see these two camps seeing themselves sitting now? Debate's over, a couple of weeks and change to go. How does the Kerry camp see its situation? How does the Bush camp?
It's clear that both campaigns recognize that John Kerry has the momentum. Not sure whether or not he can sustain that for 2.5 weeks until Election Day. Democrats like to raise a parallel with the 1980 campaign where Jimmy Carter and Ronald Reagan debated at the end. Jimmy Carter said, painted Ronald Reagan as a out-of-the-mainstream conservative sort of wacko, and Ronald Reagan debated Jimmy Carter, and he didn't look like that to the American people, and the election broke decisively toward Ronald Reagan. John Kerry is hoping that by having three steady debate performances, he could rebut by his demeanor, by his answers, the caricature of him as a flip-flopper who kept his finger to the wind all the time. One difference between this election and that one is there's a lot more campaign time between the debates and the election now than there was in 1980. And one thing we know that George W. Bush is good at is campaigning. He's good on the stump.
So you expect that that additional time may work to Bush's advantage. How do you think the Bush campaign sees it? If Kerry's got the momentum, what do they see as the cards in their pocket, the aces in their deck?
Well, they're hoping for, first of all, the conservative base in this country is bigger than the liberal base. So when Kathleen talked a few minutes ago about both sides trying to mobilize their base, there is an inherent ideological advantage for the Republicans. That's why John Kerry is reaching out more aggressively than George W. Bush is, trying to lure those swing voters. The Bush campaign doesn't think there's very many swing voters. Kathleen said 18% appear to be movable or persuadable. Bush campaign thinks it's a lot fewer than that, and that many of the ones who are still undecided aren't going to show up. So they're going to a lot of these core Republican areas, really trying to fire up those votes and to turn out that turn on that turnout machine that Karl Rove and his aides have been building for 4 years.
So in terms of how they go at this challenge, John Harwood, do you see parallel efforts here or different kinds of efforts on the air, on the ground by the Bush and Kerry camps?
I think they're very similar. We're going to see heavy television advertising in the states that count, and we're going to see a lot of under-the-radar, narrow-cast mail efforts, telephone efforts to both try to attack the other side and to mobilize their own bases.
New messages in the home stretch, or have we heard the messages they're going to take us home with?
I think we have heard the messages that really count. I think it's all it's sort of switching from the persuasion phase of the campaign, which is largely over, although, as Kathleen said, the debate effect will still ripple through the weekend. But fundamentally, these candidates have now had their shot to reach and persuade and convince voters to be on their side. And now it's about identifying who's with me, who can I get to the polls, who has already voted so I don't have to worry about them, and I'll focus on the ones who haven't had a chance to cast a ballot yet.
Jack Beatty, 19 days, and it is a real, real race, maybe a tighter race than anybody expected. What does it look like to you?
Well, I think Bush, in some ways, is right back where he started with what may be his strongest argument, just given the structural demographic realities of American politics. He's running against a liberal senator from Massachusetts. Every term of that, liberal, don't have to belabor that, senator. Bush again and again has said, I have led. I'm the man in the arena, as Teddy Roosevelt said. I act.
Not just a legislator.
That's right. I don't just talk, I act. And Massachusetts, well, only three times in the 20th century have the Democrats been able to elect a president from a state north of the Mason-Dixon line in 1912 with Woodrow Wilson because the Republican Party split, in 1932 with Franklin Roosevelt because of the Great Depression, and in 1960 with John Kennedy because then Kennedy had behind him the Solid South. Of course, now the Solid South is behind Bush. Over 60% of electoral votes are in his pocket now, and that gives Kerry very little room to maneuver. If Bush is up, as he stays up in Wisconsin as he is, takes that Gore state, it's all over for Kerry. And, you know, when you look at yesterday's polls, perhaps it'll change. Look at this. He's tied in Iowa. That was a Gore state. He's tied in New Jersey. Bush is. That was a Gore state. Up in New Mexico. That was a Gore state. Any of those things happen, and he holds on to his base states, Kerry can't win.
So you say momentum to Kerry, vote to Bush?
No. Yes, it seems to me that a lot of structural matters now come into play. A lot of the political demography of American politics is right in Bush's corner. For Kerry, he's got Bush's record and reality. Reality is not going good for the Bush administration.
We have a very full buffet of reports coming to you tonight on the end game in the presidential campaign's home stretch. John Harwood with the Wall Street Journal. Jack Beatty, please stand by. Listeners, you can join us. What does George Bush need to do to win now? What does John Kerry need to do to win? And have you joined the ground wars, the get out the vote effort in your town, on your block? How's it going? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Bush and Kerry strategies now on the way to November 2nd, and it is growing close. You can join the conversation coming out of the debates. Who's got the momentum? Which camp has the greater will to win? Which camp is better positioned to win? How's it going to happen? You can join us at 1-800-423-8255. We're joined tonight by John Harwood, national political editor for The Wall Street Journal. Our own Jack Beatty is with us as well. Millions of dollars in advertising will be placed in the next few days, 19 days down to November 2nd. Let's get a taste of what has been heading out there just in the last couple of days. Here first from the Bush camp, an ad called Worldview, released earlier this week in Battleground States, uses a quotation from a New York Times profile of John Kerry from last Sunday. The ad claims that Kerry underestimates the threat from Al-Qaeda and terrorism.
First, Kerry said defeating terrorism was really more about law enforcement and intelligence than a strong military operation. More about law enforcement than a strong military. Now Kerry says, we have to get back to the place where terrorists are a nuisance, like gambling and prostitution. We're never going to end them. Terrorism, a nuisance. How can Kerry protect us when he doesn't understand the threat?
I'm George W. Bush, and I approve this message.
One of the many Bush ads that will be showering on swing states in the coming days. John Kerry hitting themes of his own in those swing states. Here is an ad released today in Ohio called Real Americans from the Kerry camp. Claims that President Bush is out of touch with reality when it comes to how hard Ohio has been hit by unemployment.
How out of touch is George Bush with Ohio? Over the last 4 years, we've lost over 230,000 jobs in our state. Now, George Bush sends his Treasury Secretary to Ohio to tell us these job losses are a myth. Do you think it's a myth that we've lost jobs? Over 100,000 Ohioans have lost their health insurance. Family incomes have fallen by $1,500. When is George Bush going to face reality?
I'm John Kerry, and I approve this message.
A Bush ad, a Kerry ad, and they will be raining on battleground states over the next few days. We're joined right now from Washington, D.C. by Alexandra Starr. She's Capitol Hill correspondent for Business Week magazine. She's been tracking the advertising campaigns, the air campaigns of these two camps. Alexandra, thanks for being with us tonight.
My pleasure.
What volume of advertising can the nation expect to see here in the next 19 days as we head to November 2nd?
Well, if you're not in a battleground state, you won't be seeing it pretty much at all. You'll be seeing it, obviously, on national cable channels. But you're going to have to reside in there are about 14 states where they have ads in rotation now, and that's going to narrow. The last figures I saw were for late September, early October. And if you were in places like Colorado, Florida, Wisconsin, you probably saw more ads than you would ever want to. Now, the most important figures, though, and the most important, the real time to pay attention will be when the figures come out in about 2 weeks, and it'll show where the campaigns have decided to make their ad buys after this last debate. That's really where ground zero is, and that's what we have to look for.
What do we know about that, even in advance of those reports? Can you tell where the candidates are sort of putting their money, where their hopes are?
You know, the conventional wisdom is that, let's look at Pennsylvania, Ohio, and Florida. The theory is that whoever wins two of those three states will win the election. So you're going to see just a ton of manpower, you know, tons of television ads and lots of visits to those states. You know, there's some others to keep an eye on, certainly Iowa, Wisconsin, even Colorado, which is somewhat surprising given that it's been so reliably Republican in the last two election cycles.
Could be up for grabs there, could be decided almost anywhere. Alexandra, do you see messages being tailored to specific states? We heard Kerry here talking about unemployment in Ohio, but thematically, do you see them tightly tailoring to different swing states?
Yeah, I guess there's obviously in Ohio, because of job loss, that's a winning issue there. You know, Kerry has sort of a difficult path to tread, though, in the sense that a lot of those voters might empathize with his economic message. On social issues, they might be more conservative. And I think that's why you saw Senator Kerry sort of hedging so much when he dealt with some of those social issues last night, like abortion, like gay marriage. He wants to state a, quote, liberal position and yet simultaneously make these voters who might not agree with him feel as though he respects their position.
John Harwood, can you help us take a quick walk across the states and battleground states? What do you see it coming down to as the most crucial? Is it really down to three states now, or how do you look at the map?
No, it's not down to three states, but Alex is right. Those three are the three biggest, Florida, Ohio, and Pennsylvania. Look at the takeaway states that are possible for John Kerry. New Hampshire is looking pretty strong for him. He has decent prospects in Nevada, where numbers have been trending in his direction lately. Colorado is more of a long shot. If John Kerry really takes off after these debates, we could see some of the earlier battleground states that he was contesting for a while, perhaps back in play, states like Missouri and Arizona, but those look unlikely now. From the Bush side, they've got a solid prospect of taking away Wisconsin. That's a Gore state from 2000. They've got a prospect of taking away the state of Iowa. Minnesota looks to be drifting out of reach for the Bush campaign. There's some people in the Bush campaign that have pointed to an incursion into New Jersey, which is a strongly Gore state in 2000, where the polls are narrowing. Don't look for that to happen. The Bush campaign is not going to sink $1 million into New York television, which they need to do to contest that state. And the stronger John Kerry is nationally, the more New Jersey is going to drift out of reach for them. So I think if you look at the states that we just talked about, Florida, Ohio, Pennsylvania, New Hampshire, Nevada on the Democratic side, Iowa, Wisconsin on the Republican side, those are where the greatest amount of play is likely to be.
And John, what do you think about Jack Beattie's analysis that it's shaping up structurally for the Bush campaign?
I don't think that's true in any respect. I think this is a very, very even electoral college battle. The bases of both sides are in the low 200s, and we're talking about a fight for the last 60, 70 votes on each side. And I don't think it is clear that either side has the advantage right now.
Really anybody's game. John Harwood, always great speaking with you. Thanks so much for being with us tonight.
Happy to be here.
John Harwood, national political editor for The Wall Street Journal, and Alexandra Starr in Washington, thank you so much for joining us.
My pleasure.
Alexandra Starr, Capitol Hill correspondent for Business Week magazine. I want to turn to the campaigns themselves and see what they can tell us about their candidates' strategies in the home stretch. We're joined right now from Washington by Jim Dyke. He's communications director at the Republican National Committee. Jim, welcome. Thanks for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
So how do you see the state of play right now, and what is your core strategy, two, three, four elements that you hope to take George Bush to victory on November 2nd?
Well, we've got a lot of confidence after last night's debate, and we feel like momentum is really coming our way. I think we feel like the president last night really outlined the sharp contrast between the two philosophies of the candidates, the president looking to government to help those who need it, whether it's the tax relief to help our economy grow or the prescription drugs or No Child Left Behind, and Senator Kerry, who views government as something that should be more intrusive in people's lives, his government-run health care plan, and, of course, the higher taxes to pay for all his programs. We think sort of that sharp contrast runs through all the issue sets, whether it's the economy, the war on terror, whatever it might be, and we think that contrast is what will be very successful for the president going forward.
So there's the message contrast that you want to emphasize. Now take us into the machinery, Jim. What are you working here in the air war, the ads, the ground war, the organizing? How is the Bush camp positioned to drive toward its effort at victory right now in the next 19 days? What do you do?
I think you're positioned for victory based on the substance of your arguments, and that's reflected in your television commercials. It's reflected in your mail. It's reflected in the excitement that you see from your volunteers. You know, we have a program called the 72-Hour Task Force, which is...
What is that?
It is a program that started some months ago, which focuses on registering voters and engaging people in the process. You know, we registered 3 million new voters leading up to this cycle. We went into the chairman went with Don King and others on an African-American empowerment tour into communities and registered voters. We went to naturalization ceremonies and registered voters. So we had a massive voter registration drive to bring more people into the process. Now we have to focus on getting those and other voters to participate in the process. And that means absentee ballots. That means getting people to the polls on Election Day.
And how does your ground war, your get-out-the-vote machinery compare this year to 2000 or previous Republican campaigns?
Well, we feel good about it. I mean, it is a daunting task, obviously, to organize volunteers in all these states, but we literally have hundreds of thousands of volunteers who are organized to participate in phone banks and aggressively reaching out to get people to participate and using something that has not necessarily been done as effectively, we think, in the past, using the message more specifically, talking to people about issues that they care about and providing the clear contrast between the two candidates.
So there it is, on the ground, on the air, and with the message. Jim Dyke with the Republican National Committee, thank you for being with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Now from Washington, Deborah DeShong. She's a senior advisor to the Kerry Edwards campaign. Deborah, thank you for joining us.
Thank you for having me
I'll put the same question to you. How do you see your campaign as positioned here 19 days before Election Day? And what can you tell us about the three, four major elements of the Kerry strategy for driving toward what they obviously hope will be a victory?
Well, clearly we feel like the momentum is breaking our way. You know, John Kerry is 3-0 in the debates. He clearly connected with the American people last night's debate. He showed the American people that as president, he will be the champion of the middle class. Last night, he laid out his plans for growing the economy, creating jobs, and for lowering the cost of health care. You know, last night, it was the two men on stage side by side, and there was clear distinctions brought between the two of them, and I think we're going to continue to draw those distinctions on the campaign trail. We're going to be talking about our plans for America. George Bush will probably continue to be attacking John Kerry on the campaign trail. You know, he's been quite negative, but I think we haven't seen anything yet in these next 19 days. But I think the next 2 weeks, John Kerry's going to continue to make what we call his closing arguments to the American people, laying out his specific plans for addressing America's problems.
And take us then from the rhetoric, the ideas, down into the machinery. How are the Democrats positioned in ad dollars, ad buys, ground operations to drive the campaign now?
Well, you know, we are extraordinarily fortunate to have been led by campaign manager Marybeth Cahill, who has made some incredibly tough but wise choices.
Like,
you know, we were at a disadvantage in that we had 5 weeks to run, 5 extra weeks to run a general election campaign that George Bush didn't because he accepted his nomination so late.
Right.
And Marybeth Cahill made the determination that we needed to hold on to our resources so that we could make sure that in these last days of the campaign, we were very competitive.
How many dollars do you have compared to the Bush campaign?
Well, I don't think we're going to talk about exactly how much cash we have on hand. I don't think we're going to show it that much, add that much to our competitor.
And what about your Get Out the Vote operation? How does it compare to previous presidential elections for the Democrats?
You know, when you talk to folks on the ground, they will tell you that this is the most expansive, most fulsome Get Out the Vote program in the history of Democratic Party presidential politics. Just alone, the state of Wisconsin, I've spoke to some folks there today, and they're telling us that it's so active and so widespread that you would feel like Election Day is tomorrow. They have hundreds of thousands of volunteers across the country that are still signing up on our website today saying, what can I do to help? So we feel very confident that we're going to have the machinery on Election Day to get our voters to the polls.
Deborah DeShong, we hear it, and we thank you for joining us tonight. Thanks so much for being with us.
Thank you for having me.
Deborah DeShong joined us from Washington. She's a senior advisor to the Kerry Edwards campaign. Let's get a couple of different perspectives on what's going on here now on the home stretch. We're joined from Washington by James Pinkerton. He's a columnist for Newsday and a regular contributor to Fox News, a former aide to George Herbert Walker Bush and Ronald Reagan. James Pinkerton, nice to have you back on point.
Thank you.
And with us from Washington, Harold Ickes, chief of staff of ACT, Americans Coming Together, a pro-democratic, independent political group that spent millions of dollars mobilizing voters to defeat President Bush. He's former deputy chief of staff in the Clinton White House. Harold Ickes, thanks for being with us tonight.
Nice to be here.
Let me turn to you first, if I may, Harold Ickes. You're kind of a new element this year with your big 527, lots of millions of dollars for change in the White House. I guess you are formally not coordinated, and by law not coordinated with the Kerry campaign, but fully in support. How are your forces arrayed to drive your interest here in the last couple of weeks of the campaign?
Well, we are neither formally or informally coordinating or working with the campaign. We're completely independent. ACT has been focused for a number of months, in many cases well over 6 months, in battleground states that will determine the outcome of the election this year. We think it's going to be a very close election, close as 2000 was perhaps, although I now think that the tide is very much with John Kerry and that there's the basis for a very substantial win here. We have been registering voters. We have been focused on identifying persuadable swing voters. We have a very extensive canvassing on the ground operation where we are talking to swing voters, and we're focused on primarily swing voters up until now. We are now going to start engaging in gearing up for a very substantial get out the vote operation. We expect to have at least 45,000 paid people on the street in about 12 or 13 states. Starting the weekend going into the election to get out what we think will be the largest Democratic turnout in history.
Is there any precedent for that in terms of supporting a Democratic presidential candidate? Any precedent for what you're offering to John Kerry this year?
Well, as I say, I want to really stress that we are independent. There's been nothing like this in my life, in my political lifetime. My first presidential campaign was in 1968 with Gene McCarthy, in which we had a huge outpouring of grassroots level, but I've never seen anything the like of it this year, and certainly in my experience, nothing has been built that is as large and as well-funded, as focused, and as technologically capable as America Coming Together.
Jim Pinkerton, give us your view on how the two camps sit right now and how you see the Bush operation as they steam toward November 2nd.
Well, I tend to agree that it's extremely close and that Kerry has a slight momentum coming out of the debate last night. My overwhelming feeling last night on the debate was the number of issues that they're not talking about, the candidates aren't talking about adequately.
Such as?
Outsourcing. Mm-hmm. Kerry says we'll solve outsourcing by a tax credit, and Bush says we'll solve outsourcing by improving education. And I think the reality, if either of them were honest, would have been that, look, these jobs are gone. They're leaving, and they're never coming back. I don't think either candidate was honest about immigration. The Washington Times had a report on Wednesday, maybe true, maybe not, but that 25 Chechens crossed the border from Mexico into the United States in July. And everybody remembers what happened in Beslan, Russia, and so who knows what's going on. But the point is nobody knows because 3 million people come across the border from Mexico and nobody keeps track. And neither Kerry nor Bush had anything to say except sort of to say vaguely, in Kerry's case, he wanted to help families reunite, and in Bush's case, he wants more people coming in to work at the minimum wage. I found it sort of astonishing that neither of them would speak honestly about the national security implications of this. But I also was struck by the way they talked about health care. It's a fact that this country is getting older, and that as people get older, they naturally spend more money on health care. And so, again, I don't think that anything that the candidate said last night is going to restrain health care costs, nor necessarily should it restrain health care costs. But if health care costs are destined to rise at 10 or 15% a year for the rest of the century, people ought to be honest about how that's going to be accounted for.
There's a lot more we want to hear from you, James Pinkerton, and from Harold Ickes. Jack Beatty, hang with us as well. We're talking tonight about the end game in the presidential campaign's home stretch, Bush and Kerry strategies now on the way to November 2nd. You can join us tonight. What does George Bush need to do to win now? What does John Kerry need to do to win? And coming out of the debates, who's got the momentum? Which camp has the greater will to win? We're at 1-800-423-8255. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're talking tonight about Bush and Kerry's strategies. Now, on the way, the short path to November 2nd, my guest, James Pinkerton, columnist for Newsday and a regular contributor to Fox News, a former aide to Bush 41 and to Ronald Reagan. And with us, from Washington, Harold Ickes, chief of staff of ACT, Americans Coming Together. It's a 527. He's former deputy chief of staff in the Clinton White House. Jack Beatty is with us as well. You can join us. What's it going to take to clinch this election one way or the other? 1-800-423-8255. Ron is calling from Eugene, Oregon. Hi, Ron. You're on the air.
Hello, Tom. I'm out here in the swing state of Oregon. I'm a small business person, also a Democrat. And my observation this year is that, you know, where the Republicans in year 2000, after the Clinton years and failed impeachment, were angry, I'm seeing the Democratic electorate being passionately almost panicked about the possible reelection of George Bush. And I'm wondering how the Move On organization and some of the other guests, if they're seeing any effect here, and if this is nationwide, because if what I'm seeing turns into a get out the vote, the Democrats are going to really have a lot more people at the polls than they had the last time around.
If the passion is just that high, you think they're losing sleep over this, Ron?
Actually, you know, I have talked with a number of people that said this is keeping them up at night, losing sleep, affecting their productivity at work. I mean, this is at a level of frustration and passion that I have to tell you also, I was a journalist for 15 years in the 80s, early 90s. I've never seen anything like this.
They've got to have it. Ron, we've got it. Let me put it to Harold Ickes. Can you see the evidence of that, Harold? You saw Clinton campaign. You've seen plenty of presidential seasons. Is the fever really that much higher this year? Is it palpable?
I don't think I've never seen the intensity, and I've been in every presidential, engaged in every presidential cycle beginning with 1968, and this even surpasses 1968. George Bush has a lot of supporters. There's no question about this. It's a very evenly divided country, but he has a lot of detractors, and they are engaged and mobilized as I've never seen them before. I think both sides are going to be, will have a large turnout. I think the Democrats have a much more expandable base than do the Republicans. We have, all of us are putting a lot of effort into getting out our vote, and I think that the swing vote will also be critical. It seems to me that they were waiting to really get their, to sort of get a feel of Kerry. I think these three debates, they really now have a feel for him, and I think you're going to start seeing the swing votes break for Senator Kerry.
And Jim Pinkerton, what's your sense of that will to win on the GOP side? How fired up, how motivated? Does it equal what you're hearing here from our caller?
I think the Republicans are extremely motivated to vote for Bush. I think Bush, almost all the reasons why the Democrats would dislike the guy are reasons why so many Republicans do like him. I was struck, however, by when the caller from Oregon used all his reasons about, well, the reason we're all going to vote for Kerry is because we hate Bush. Okay, fair enough. What's striking to me about this election is that this is an election of passionate Bush supporters versus, strangely enough, passionately anti-Bush opponents. You don't really hear very many people say much nice about Kerry. I mean, he's sort of the generic Democrat on the ballot. I don't think he really adds much to the ticket. But I tend to agree that, as with Harold, what he said, that the Democrats have a potentially larger base, and if they can motivate it through dislike of Bush, that counts as much as if they motivate it through affection for Kerry.
Dislike can work. Lori's calling from Milwaukee. Hi, Lori. You're on the air.
Hi. This is such a great program. Another swing state, and I had heard earlier somebody say they haven't seen anything yet as far as it getting ugly, and just in the last couple of days, this is a good example. The mayor of Milwaukee sent extra ballots for the central city, and the county executive, who's a Republican, refused to print the extra ballots.
Hmm.
And I think there's going to be a lot of disenfranchised minority candidates. If it happens in Milwaukee, it's going to happen again. And I firmly believe that the Republicans will do anything to steal this election. And this is just one example, 19 days before the election, and now we're going through this. And it just seems like this could be another Florida up here.
Nobody wants to see Florida all over. Got it. Nobody wants to see Florida all over again, and yet the stakes are so high. Jack Beatty, have you been watching this, the election day issues that may emerge here and the preparation for that?
This is the underground war,
underground.
Yeah. The New York Times this morning has a story about the problems like that in Florida, with the Secretary of State, the reincarnation of the lady from the last time, pretty much at variance with what the courts want to do in terms of checking the count manually. So there's a problem there. And another paper reports, Eugene Oregon paper, that there's a federal criminal indictment been taken out against a man who runs a company, a get-out-the-vote company, for tearing up Democratic ballots, registering people, and then tearing up the registration cards. And there are witnesses that have seen that. This fellow works for the Republican Party. He's done it in Nevada. He's done it in Oregon. He's done it in Pennsylvania. He's done it in a few other places. So, yes, this is a problem. And this election may have a long coda in the courts.
Harold Ickes, let me ask you about that. You've got a lot of paid volunteers, 40,000 plus. Do you expect or want to have them playing a watchdog role on November 2nd, or will they be all done by then?
Well, no. Given the history of the Republican Party and voter suppression throughout the country, and in particular in minority areas, we are going to keep a very close watch on it. There are other organizations that have organized and mobilized quite literally thousands of lawyers who will be working in the critical precincts. But the Republican Party has a very, very long and very unsavory history in this regard. Mm. We put nothing past them in this election. And we are going to keep a very watchful and vigilant eye.
Jim Pinkerton, last word goes to you. Fair voter suppression, a fair charge? And what about the Republicans looking at what happens on November 2nd?
I would say that having grown up in Chicago, the Democrats have a distinguished history of vote fraud. And I think actually I was born in Boston, kind of think of it, and same thing there. I think just to underscore what Jack said, I think it's entirely likely this election is anywhere close, like within a point or two, that we could have, I mean, I hate to say it, months of litigation.
Even if it's within a point or two, I mean, that's not that close compared to 2000.
The 2000 election was 0.5, as I recall.
Right. So you're saying that even with a point or two points.
Yeah, I suspect that, sure, because some of these states almost inherently are going to be 10 votes or 50 votes or 500 votes or something. And I do agree both sides have got enormous mobilizations of lawyers and activists, and they're going to be screaming vote fraud even before the vote happens.
Jim, probably. We've only got 20 seconds. Can the country take that? Months in the courts? No, seriously.
We survived 1968. Let's hope.
Well, what a picture. And it's a rush all the way now. James Pinkerton, wonderful having you tonight. Thanks so much for joining us. And Harold Ickes, thank you very much for being with us.
Terrific. Thank you.
Harold Ickes, Chief of Staff of Americans Coming Together, and James Pinkerton, columnist for Newsday and a regular contributor to Fox News. Jack Beatty, great having you tonight. Thanks so much. We'll be watching.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation online at onpointradio.org. Click on forums. In a moment, John Kerry and the Catholic vote. This is On Point. John Kerry is trying to become the nation's second Catholic president, but if some leaders in his own church have their way, he won't. Catholic bishops in Colorado, St. Louis, and Newark, New Jersey, have issued statements encouraging voters not to vote for a pro-choice candidate like Kerry. Other Catholics counter that voters have a responsibility to consider more than just a candidate's stance on abortion, such as the war in Iraq and issues of social justice. Catholics make up a quarter of the U.S. electorate. In 2000, they split roughly equally between George Bush and Al Gore. Tonight we bring you the reflections of two Catholic theologians with different perspectives on the vote. First, we will hear from Father Stephen Taracco, chair of the theology department at Assumption College in Worcester, Massachusetts. And then from Mark Roach, dean of the College of Arts and Letters at the Catholic University of Notre Dame in Indiana.
The responsibility of a Catholic in the upcoming presidential election is to have a properly formed and correctly informed conscience on moral truth. When a candidate embraces what the church would call an intrinsic and serious evil, then the Catholic voter must refrain from voting for such a candidate. Otherwise, the Catholic voter becomes an accomplice in that candidate's embrace of an intrinsic evil. Abortion is one example of an intrinsic evil. Embryonic stem cell research would be another, insofar as that requires the destruction of human embryos. These are obviously not the only issues on the table, but these are in a category of their own. From the Catholic point of view, a candidate who embraces such intrinsic evil disqualifies himself from further consideration.
When choosing a candidate, it's wise for the Catholic to make an assessment of the various issues at play that divide the two parties and the two candidates. And if one were to list those various issues, the Democrats would probably come out higher. Many supporters of the Republican Party make the mistake of identifying abortion as the only life and death issue in this campaign. There are other life and death issues. The Republicans are also very critical of embryonic stem cell research. So the Republicans have two life issues on their side, and they're very weighty issues. Anyone who chooses to vote for John Kerry has to recognize that that is, in some ways, a tragic vote. On the other hand, the Democrats are more in line with Catholic teaching on such life and death issues as universal health care, the environmental issue, where both John Paul II and the U.S. Conference of Catholic Bishops have presented strong documents in favor of aggressive and ambitious environmental stewardship, the death penalty. Another important life and death issue in this campaign is the war in Iraq.
Capital punishment and resorting to war, according to the Church's teaching, are not intrinsically evil. They are potentially extrinsically evil. In other words, resorting to the death penalty in defense of the citizen against the aggressor conceivably could be necessary to accomplish that defense. In such a case, capital punishment is not evil, it is good. In the case of war, the Church teaches that there are certain conditions for a war to be morally justified, and Catholics can differ among themselves whether a this or that war is morally justifiable, but ultimately the Church teaches that it is the authority and responsibility of the civil government to make that determination. So you can't put a candidate's support for resorting to war or the death penalty in the same category as intrinsic evils such as abortion and embryonic stem cell research.
Cardinal Ratzinger, who oversees the Office of Doctrine for the Vatican, the Vatican's Congregation for the Doctrine of the Faith, has issued a statement in July that became public in which he makes it clear that choosing a politician to vote for is a very complex process, and that abortion is not the only factor that should be considered or that must be considered. He recognizes that it would be a sin for a Catholic to choose a politician because of their pro-choice stance, but he recognizes that it's possible to find other reasons to support a candidate independently of his or her pro-choice position, so that it is, in a sense, approved at very high levels in the Vatican for a Catholic to vote for John Kerry if he or she is not doing so because of his pro-choice position, but doing so because of other considerations such as universal health care, the death penalty, the just war theory, and equitable taxes.
As a Catholic priest, I do not tell anyone whom to vote for. I can only instruct the Catholic in terms of moral principle and moral truth. And that teaching and that instruction should be sufficient for the Catholic voter to understand the difference between disqualifying issues and issues about which there can be a wide, legitimate disagreement.
I don't speak for the University of Notre Dame, but from my own perspective, I will be voting for John Kerry. I have supported his campaign, and I do believe that he supports more positions that are in line with the Catholic Church.
Mark Roach, Dean of the College of Arts and Letters at the Catholic University of Notre Dame in Indiana, and Father Stephen Taracco, Chair of the Theology Department at Assumption College in Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.